Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Jersey Coastal Live. I'm Andrea Tarr. And today we have with us Marilyn Schlossbach, who is definitely a mommy, so we might hear a little mommy background noise, but that's okay. Everyone who knows Marilyn, who is obviously very well known at the Jersey Shore and well beyond, she's a chef. She's a restaurateur, and she's also a philanthropist, and she's about to add something else to her credentials. She is a cookbook author, and her cookbook is called Eat This Community. So we're going to get to hear a lot about the cookbook today, and this is not just any cookbook, because this is a Marilyn Schlossbach cookbook. This means that profits from the cookbook are going to be used to support some of Marilyn's very favorite causes. And among them are the Kula Cafe in Asbury Park. Marilyn has kind of, you know, done it all in the food world. She is has a pretty much a food empire down here at the Jersey Shore, including Langosta Lounge, Pop's Garage, Labrador Lounge, Asbury Park Yacht Club. I think there's another one that I can't even remember. And, of course, there's also all the catering. She's a community activist. The list goes really on and on. Marilyn, you are a very impressive woman, and I've waited a long time to have the opportunity to speak to you. So thank you for being with me today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Oh, really, really my pleasure. So, you know, actually the very first thing I wanted to ask you was, so where did you get your love of cooking and food? Where does that all come from?
I think, one, it stems from the fact that my mother didn't cook much and my father loved to entertain. So I always had a need to fill in the gaps there. And also my travels.
So you've been
my
cooking
husband
for a
and
very
I
long
are,
time.
Huh. Actually, this is my 30th year anniversary of being in the kitchen.
Well, that's kind of good news for the people that patronize all your restaurants. What's one of your early memories of cooking in your family?
My dad used to have a this special grill that he made in our backyard. He made it himself at bricks, and every weekend he would have all different people come, neighbors, friends, family, and they would make lobsters in the backyard because I grew up in Delmar, so I grew up by the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And lobster is one of the favorite things in summer. And my dad had a beautiful garden in our backyard where he grew tomatoes and roses and fresh strawberries and corn. And he would entertain every weekend. And he was a big meat eater. So we always had all these crazy meats and tongue and tripe. And at a very early age, I had an aversion to meat because of my father and kind of went the route of fish and vegetables.
Yep. So what's
you
one
know,
of
when
the
you open the fridge
things?
As a kid and there's a big tongue in your refrigerator, it kind of changes your reality on cows, you know.
Yeah, you know, I could totally understand that. It's a delicacy for many, but for many it's a scary sight to see a cow's tongue, especially as a kid. No, I can definitely understand that. What's one of the first things you can remember cooking as a kid at home?
Well, probably lobster. I mean, we used to...
Oh, okay. Well, that makes
I
sense.
I used to hang out with my dad and help him and play around in the garden. So, you know, we'd always make fresh salads. And I mean, if you're from this area and you've ever, like, hand-picked a tomato off a vine...
Yeah.
It's, you know, cooking it is just plopping it in your mouth, basically. You know, there's
That's right.
no preparation necessary. So... I can always remember foraging through the strawberry patch in our backyard and just eating strawberry like candy as a little kid. And, you know, cooking to me isn't necessarily being behind a stove all the time. You know, it's where we travel and do things, and the memories that I have aren't generally come to mind as much as if you, you know, smell something and you're like, wow, that reminds me of when when
I was
made this matzo ball soup, or when I was in Nicaragua and, you know, we made this mahi taco, or I was in Thailand, and, you know, just a scent can bring back so much memory. And a lot of my memories come from that.
No, I totally agree. You smell something and it takes you right back to childhood or a special memory or a special destination. Definitely true.
Yeah,
definitely. I always thought that myself. Now, were you always a bit of an activist involved in the community?
Yeah, my first job aligns with my first restaurant. When I was 18, I was a canvasser for the New Jersey Environmental Federation.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of a grueling job, you know, going door to door asking people to donate money is really tough to do. And at that time, Cindy Ziff, who is the director of Clean Ocean Action now and, you know, the first active board member of the organization, did her coming out party at our first restaurant, Ocean, in Avon.
Mm-hmm.
And I started working for her, and I organized their first ever, like, gala fundraiser. It was on this boat out of the Highlands. And, you know, they were pure environmentalists doing great environmental work, but didn't know how to throw a party. And,
got it.
You know, just from my childhood and my first experience in the restaurant world with my brother, you know, entertaining was fun for me, and I, you know, I had a knack for it, so we did this fundraiser, and I continue to work for her, and she's probably one of my strongest mentors as a human being and an activist, just a really smart, wonderful lady.
So for you, the gala was just like throwing a big party. I like that.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think,
I like that.
You know, my world of entertaining and hospitality is a great way to enlighten people to causes without, you know, going the route of traditional way of raising money or awareness. It's a very social atmosphere, and people are much more open to give you their money and their time when they're enjoying themselves while they're doing it.
And when there's food involved, always.
Yes, exactly.
Always food involved. I know. That's a family trait in my family as well. Definitely, definitely.
Yeah.
So now let's just talk a little bit about, before we get into the cookbook, tell me a little bit about the Kula Cafe. And for the, and by the way, Kula is a word that I know from Hawaii, and it's a wonderful word. And you could talk, if you would, talk about that and explain to everyone exactly what is the Kula Cafe, because it does have a very special mission.
Yes. Well, it came about in two platforms, kind of. When I had my 40th birthday, I guess it was there. Wow, that was a long time ago. Or 45th birthday. Sorry. So it couldn't have been 10 years. I asked my husband. I've never had a birthday really off because my birthday is in August, and in my world, that's not a good time to take off for anything.
Yes.
So I said to him, you know, I really want to do this one thing in my life that I've always wanted to do, which was to do a all-women surf yoga meditation retreat.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to Hawaii for my 45th birthday, and the first round table that all the women did was about kula. And the concept of kula in the Hawaiian or the Sanskrit, whichever one you want to Google, tells you that it's the community of the heart.
Yes.
And that word just resonated with me because of what I do in my community and how I feel about my staff and my life. And when I came home, I had always wanted to create a space in Asbury Park that had the ability to give back to the community and to lift the community up. And I had been doing a food, like soup truck with Interfaith Neighbors. Two evenings a week, we would go out into the West Side community and give out hot soup and hot chocolate and some pastries that were donated from Frank's Deli in Asbury.
Yep.
And just give people something warm and hang out with our community. And the next year they were going after the grant money again, and they came to me and they said, you know, we have to tweak this grant because we can't do it the same and get the same grant. And I said, well, you know, I have this idea. I think you're going to think I'm crazy, but how about we open a cafe and expand on this concept and teach these youth that have been going out on this truck how to work in a restaurant. And that way, all the restaurants in Asbury Park and in the surrounding area who need employees, we're one of the biggest growing restaurant communities in Monmouth County, and we always need staff. Let's hire from our community. But we have to teach our community. Number one, most of these kids have never been in a restaurant for McDonald's or Burger King.
Right.
This is not where they normally would go, and they feel uncomfortable in it. So we have to make them feel comfortable here. Number two, most youth, especially inner city youth, don't have the work ethic to go out and get a job, period. Never mind in the hospitality world, which is a very elevated service industry compared to an office job. So we have to retrain these kids how to feel important about themselves so that they're willing to make other people feel important. And that is the biggest challenge with the Cooler Cafe. The food aspect of it is the easy part for us because we know food. But how do we teach these kids really to just believe in themselves and feel comfortable going out and getting a job and holding that job? So the Cooler Cafe was born. When I went to the directors there and gave them my idea, they were all about it. And within a year, they had secured the money and started the construction. And this beautiful cafe has been in existence for over a year now. We've hired probably about 8 to 12 kids from that program in our restaurant. We have a couple of them still employed here now, and we have a new one coming in a couple weeks. And they've gone on to do other things, not necessarily with us, but I think once you learn how to treat people well in a business environment, in a restaurant, you can do anything. You have got a service skill above and beyond what most industries will require of you. So you could sell pharmaceuticals, you could sell candy, you could work in a Wegmans, you could work for a big corporation, you know, if you put your mind to it.
So you're focusing on the people skills, the customer service aspect.
Yeah, this is front of the house training. It's not culinary. They do a bit of culinary there because it's a very hands-on program. But our intention wasn't to open a culinary school. There's many great culinary schools. We have one with Brookdale right in our backyard. But there aren't schools focusing on the front of the house. There's, you know, people like Danny Meyer who offer courses, but there's not, you know, a college degree in hospitality on that level unless you, you know, want to go to Johnson & Wales. But your local community colleges, even the culinary programs, aren't offering service industry degrees.
And of course, not everybody can be the chef. Not everybody wants to be the chef. Yeah.
No, and, you know, I feel, I know for myself that with the knowledge of waitressing or bartending or hosting or managing a restaurant, you can go anywhere in the world and get a job. You know, you might have to learn a new language, but most places have English, you know, hotels and restaurants that cater to Americans or Canadians. And, you know, that skill travels with you wherever you go. So it's a great opportunity to work while you're in college, to travel somewhere new. And right here in Asbury, we have over 50 restaurants. So there's all these places to work in your backyard.
Yeah. And so how do the kids react at the Cooler Cafe learning all these new skills? How are they doing?
Well, once we get them in and vet them, I mean, that's the most difficult thing with the Cooler Cafe. The most challenging thing is that it is a cafe open to the public. So if you are committing to do the program, you have to be there because you are the staff of the restaurant. So say three of you don't show up today, we have to close, you know. So that's the challenging thing. But once we get the kids vested in the program, it's remarkable to see how their personalities shift, how they open up, how they have confidence in themselves.
Very nice. Very nice. I like the idea that you you keep a lot of your work local. I think it's wonderful. I really do. And since for me, Asbury Park was such a huge part of my childhood and my adulthood, I always had a special affinity for it. So I feel very lucky to live in this area. I'm sure you feel that way too.
I do. I like feeling where I'm needed, you know, and, you know, sometimes I go to other places and feel needed as well, but it's nice to help your own community and to see the people that are living and working around you grow, you know.
Marilyn, what really drives you? What pushes you to keep being such an activist for so many organizations?
I don't think it's a thought process, quite honestly. You know, my husband drives me crazy because every idea I have has some sort of charity component to it, including, you know, my accountant, who's always laughing at me about the amount of money and gift certificates and time I give away. It's just, you know, it's, for me, it's natural. I'm sure that's not for everybody. And, you know, everybody has what they gravitate to. For me, I always think about how can I help somebody with whatever I'm doing. And, you know, the gratification is not financial for me. It's seeing just one individual change for the better and watching that process grow. You know, we just implemented a water project in Nicaragua that we funded through water bottles that we sold in the restaurant, kind of showing people, number one, it's not always great to drink water bottles of water, but if we're going to sell them and consumers are going to use them, how can we turn that around and help somebody else? So we just implemented over 200 water filter purifiers in Nicaragua in the jungle.
Very
good. Which is going to help, you know, hundreds of people have clean water.
Right,
so,
something we take for granted. Yeah,
totally. You know, my daughters are always running the water in the house, and you can't explain to a two-year-old that there's people around the world who don't have water, but hopefully someday it'll catch on to them.
Someday it will, of course. So now let's talk about the cookbook, because this is something different for you. And I love the name of it, of course, Eat This Community. So why a cookbook? Why now?
Well, it's not why now, because I've been working on it for like 4 years.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's been a labor-intensive process for two reasons. One, it's my first, so it's like having your first child. I'm being overly critical and neurotic about it. And two, it's out of my element. You know, as a chef in my kitchen, I'm a sauté chef, so I'm not a baker. I don't go off recipes. You know, even recipeing things for my staff is time-consuming for me because, you know, I go off my flavor, my tongue, my smell, it's not my MO to write things down all the time. So compiling all these recipes, which, you know, a lot of them we use in the restaurant, so we have them, but perfecting them, make sure that they're right, and then scaling them down to you making them at home for 4 to 10 people when we make them in batches for 1,000 people has been another whole process. And
I can see that being a challenge. Yeah, it is.
I mean, you know, I make 25-gallon batches, and you're going to make a quart. You know,
right.
How do we make
that
work? You know, and you know, it's a beautiful cookbook. I didn't want to do something, just take my recipes and, you know, print them and make it look like I made it at, you know, the local printer. I got a little overzealous, and I met this photographer years ago. He did an article on us for the New York Times when we first opened, and we really clicked. He actually went to Haiti with me on two of my trips there and photographed the trips, and just a really talented, wonderful guy. Had never done food photography until he started, you know, working with me on other stuff and would just shoot while he was waiting for me, and he had a really good eye for it. And then I met another woman who works for a magazine called Local, who did an issue on Asbury Park, who also is very talented. And I got them together to photograph the book. And they're both perfectionists like I am, so they're not settling for shots that aren't right, you know. And then we hired an illustrator from Local Magazine who's down in down south, and I think she's in North Carolina, who I've never met in person. But it's been doing things back and forth via email, and is like producing really awesome work, not having ever met me, you know, face to face, but kind of gets what I'm about from what they did in local. So it's a lot of talented, creative people really striving for the best product we can produce. And then there's the charity element to it.
Yeah,
which adds a
whole
talk
about
other
that,
dimension.
Of course.
Well, just like everything.
You know what? I just want to say, because you did send me some sample pages, and the pictures are absolutely ravishing. They really are. They're gorgeous. And I've dabbled a little bit myself in food photography, so I really appreciate that. It is an art. So the cookbook, you're right, it's just not pictures and recipes. It's really, you've got a lot of cool stuff going on in there. You've got little bits of info and, you know, as you have on the cover, it says, recipes and stories from the Jersey Shore. So it's a little more than just looking at recipes, much more, actually. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted a more of a coffee table book than a cookbook.
Mm-hmm.
I collect cookbooks. Mm-hmm. I have hundreds of them. And very rarely do I go look in them for a recipe. I mean, now that we have the World Wide Web, you just Google
right.
it.
Right.
But I do look at them for the beauty of the books. And, you know, I put them out. They're in the restaurant, so you can go look at them. And I think that a lot of cookbooks are works of art. And I said, when I do my cookbook, if I ever do one, I want it to relate it to, I want to sell it in anthropology, not
to be a work of art.
Yeah, I want people to buy this book because it's beautiful and they could actually sit down and read it and, you know, kind of get some new knowledge. And, you know, of course, being who I am, I couldn't think of doing something and not giving back. So we decided to make the chapters connected to charities, you know, and some are local that we work with here in Asbury
like
Park.
Like the Kula
some
Cafe,
are
Kula's,
and they are the center of Asbury Park. The community affairs, which used to be Hispanic Affairs, Boys and Girls Club that we do some programs with through the restaurant. And then some are bigger national or international charities like Waves for Water, which we did the Nicaragua Project, Clean Ocean Action, Surf Rider Foundation. But they, I've worked with these people, so there's a connection to them. And it was hard to choose the charities because there's so many charities that I want to help. And it's like I can't help all of them in this book because we can't have, you know, 200 chapters here. But hopefully we'll do more of these and then we can help more. Or we'll do other projects with other charities. But it's 11
chapters. Right, I'm thinking this is just your
this is
just your first cookbook, I have a feeling. You have so many people to help.
I hope so. I mean,
that would be very nice.
I mean, it was hard to choose recipes. It's, you know, it was hard to figure out how to make these chapters connect to the charity in a certain way. And basically this cookbook is laid out that each chapter is a dinner or a lunch or a brunch. So you could take all the recipes from that chapter and create your own little entertainment for friends and family. So it's not like appetizers, soups, entrees. Each chapter has everything you would need to create the perfect event.
That
and
is a very interesting spin. I like that.
Yeah. I wanted it to be not so traditional. And when we were looking at, like, Mary's Place is one of our charities. It's a recovery center for women who have cancer. And we do an event every year called Boobs for Life with them. And it's a charity brunch. So that chapter is a brunch chapter, and it's recipes from those brunches that we've done. You know, so every chapter has its own twist. The Boys and Girls Club is all desserts because it's kids.
Kids
love dessert.
Bring
that's
on the
only chapter that's all something.
How did you figure out the recipes? Or is there anything significant about the recipes that you've chosen?
Well, they're all recipes except for one chapter that are favorites of mine.
Okay.
There's a chapter that has recipes from the restaurants, so they're chefs that I've collaborated with in the restaurants that have either worked on a recipe with me or I've worked on a recipe with them and we've used it in the venues. And then the dessert chapter is a compilation of desserts that we've done over the years. So, you know, it's all stuff that we've served at one time or another. And the cocktails are all different cocktails that either are my favorite cocktails or wines that I love or favorites of customers in the restaurant.
Very nice. Okay. So, of course, the burning question I know for everyone is going to be, so when will the cookbook be available for people to purchase?
Well, that's a question for everybody, including the publisher.
right.
Amanda, who's doing the editing, just emailed me the other day that she's done with everything but the charity chapter, so we're compiling that now. There's going to be a glossary of all the charities with their mission and how to contact them. You can learn more, and that's hopefully we'll review this all, and that'll be it, and we'll go to print and be out before the summer.
Oh, all right. So that's okay. So really just a few, we still have just a few more months to go. That's not bad at all.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Marty, my publisher, wants it in your hands by the end of April, but you know, it's like anything you do, you always want something. You don't always do it.
What was the most challenging part of this whole process of creating a cookbook, since you said this was something new for you and it took you somewhat out of your comfort zone?
I mean, it's a very overwhelming thing. You know, this thing is almost 300 pages.
Oh,
there's interaction
wow.
with the charities. There's the photography. There's the compiling of all these recipes and scaling them back. I mean, it's like something I've never done. It's like you go to a new job for the first time. You think you have all these skills to do it, and then you get in there, and you're like, wow, I have so much to learn here. And it's exciting and fun and scary, and it makes your heart race every time you go to work. But then after you get over that curve, then it's, you know, it's passionate and creative. And then you kind of get stuck in your creative mode for a while, and now we're trying to rail it all in and make it, you know, make it go to print. You know?
So here's my question for you, because you are one of the busiest ladies ever. The busiest humans ever. You've got so many different things going on. Really, you wear so many different hats. So I just wonder, how do you keep track of it all? How do you stay balanced? How do you know what you're doing on a daily basis? What do you do for yourself?
It's tough. You know, my I used to have a business coach, and I'm still very close with her, and I just did this art project with her, and she's like, you know, you need to get a book on the Renaissance personality and how to manage that.
Well, that's
so. I did.
Are.
I bought a book. I am, and I never knew what that was until I read this book. And, you know, it gave me a lot of tips. I work with a women's group called Savior, which, you know, basically you try and figure out how to savor your own moments for yourself. And, you know, honestly, the biggest work in progress that I have in my life is how to do things for myself and be myself, you know, and how to balance what I need out of things. And when your job is so much a part of your social life and your creative spirit, it's very hard to manage yourself financially or otherwise. You know, when you have extra money, you're putting it back into your business. When you have extra time, you're doing something for your business. And fortunately, I love what I do, so, you know, I love coming to work. I love being with the people I work with. I love new projects, and, you know, I try to get away. I mean, we went to Nicaragua for 3 weeks. I spent a week of it doing the water project, but I still spent 2 weeks with my kids on the beach, you know.
Well, that's good, yeah. It's all about
balance. You know, I'll go for a run when I can. I'll take a yoga class. Or, you know, I do things for myself periodically, probably not as much as most people, but, you know, it's just the life I chose.
Yeah. Right. Well, you know what? We only have less than a minute left. So, first of all, let me say, Meryl, I told you it's the fastest 30 minutes ever. So let me say very quickly, thank you, Marilyn, for being with me today. Eat This Community is Marilyn Schlossbeck's new cookbook. It'll be out in a couple of months. And get to the Kula Cafe in Asbury Park. I think you're going to be very surprised. Marilyn, you do wonderful things, and thank you for this opportunity for me to be able to speak to you. So, as
well,
I always say,
you.
Oh, my pleasure. Can 30 minutes change your life? Maybe. So keep listening to Jersey Coastal Live. Till next time, I'm Andrea Tarr. Marilyn, thank you again. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
You too. Namaste.
Namaste.